This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in to WEEI. I'm John Lyons alongside, you may have heard his voice before, you've definitely seen his name in print, Tom Carroll from WEEI.com. We got Jacob Lassner producing as well. But Tom, welcome in. How are you?
I'm doing well. Made it here in the snow. So that's never a guarantee when the weather is the way it is. But yeah. We got here and let's talk sports.
Yeah, crappy day out. My headphones aren't fully working. You know, Tom, it's a great Sunday afternoon.
Wonderful.
But there is good news. And we're going to start with some good news. Alex Bregman, obviously, look, he signed a few days ago. You've heard every take there needs to be said about Alex Bregman signing. But what I want to talk about, Tom, is, look, obviously Alex Bregman, really good player. He's great at Fenway Park, as we know. He hit 260 last year, but after June 1st, he hit 283. So he had a really good last 4 months. Two-time World Series champion. I think one of the biggest things about this Bregman signing is not just his numbers at Fenway Park, the fact that, you know, he's been a good hitter in his career, that he won a Gold Glove last year. It's they brought in a guy who's a two-time World Series champion and who knows what it takes to win. Because you look at their roster right now. On the pitching staff, they bring in Walker Buehler, two-time World Series champion, guy who knows how to win. In their lineup, they had Devers, who was a World Series champion. But if you remember in 2018, from a leadership perspective, he was like the fourth or fifth guy. I mean, that was Bogaerts, Betts, J.D. Martinez, Steve Pierce, Christian Vasquez. All those guys on at least the leadership pecking order were ahead of Devers. Bregman's a guy who was one of the leaders of multiple World Series championship teams. And you get that Scott Boras quote that we just played. It feels like they're targeting guys who, yes, are good players, obviously, but are also winners. And they want to operate a little bit differently than they have the past few years.
And I think that that's really exciting if you're a Red Sox fan. Now, your expectations should be tempered. And I'm okay if Red Sox fans want to decide to be guarded a little bit here. Because, yes, they've done everything they've done this offseason. They go out and they get Crochet. They go out and get Buehler. They make this awesome signing with Bregman. But now we need to see them continue to do that. And there has been some smoke in the last 24 hours or so about Dylan Cease with San Diego and possibly making a move for him. If that does happen, I think it's time to fully say that this ownership group and that this front office is ready to be serious again and be a serious baseball team, because they haven't been that in 5 years. And I don't know what changed. I don't know what it was that clicked for John Henry and those guys to say, oh yeah, if we actually spend money on our baseball team, we can actually matter in this town and people won't hate me. And if I put a picture out of me smoking a cigar, people will be like, wow, that's so sick, and say cool things about me on the internet. I don't know if it was the Netflix documentary this fall about the 2004 Sox team that made it click for him in his head. Like, oh yeah, like we can matter again. And this can be awesome, because right now it's not awesome. Being a 500 team in Boston when you're the Red Sox is not awesome. Getting Bregman and getting winners in here and actually spending money on your baseball team, that can help things be awesome again.
And you wonder, did the Dodgers and Yankees playing in the World Series play a little bit of a role in that? Did the Celtics winning a championship downtown play a little bit of a role in that? And also, it's not 2018 where you had the highest payroll in baseball. It's not the four times you've won a World Series this century where you top three in payroll all four times. But it does feel a lot different than it did a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And Tom, what did we hear right after the season? people, reports out there, agents saying, hey, the Red Sox are operating differently. Hey, things feel a little bit different. Yeah, last year they said full throttle, but behind the scenes, it wasn't any different. This year feels different. And if you look at their two marquee additions, Garrett Crochet, you give up Kyle Teal in that deal. You give up multiple prospects. That was something that under Heim Bloom, they hadn't done. Now, they accumulated a lot of great prospects under Heim Bloom, but they were pretty reluctant to trade a lot of those guys under Heim Bloom. So that's a departure from what you had done. And then the Bregman deal, it's still, look, a short-term deal. It's only a three-year deal, and it could be a one-year deal if he has a great year and opts out. But you still spent $40 million in year one with, what is it, $20 million deferred or whatever. So you're still putting together a contract that has $40 million a year, which is something, you look back, outside of Rafael Devers, the only other nine-figure contract they gave out in the last 5 years was Trevor Story. So it is a departure. Both of those things are departures. Now, is it the same as the Yankees giving Max Fried all those years? No. Is it the same as Corbin Burns getting those years in Arizona? No. But it is a departure from what they've done the last few years. And, Tom, I think it's a good departure, obviously. But I wonder, to your point, is it, hey, they did things a little differently this offseason. They're invested in winning again. Or is this the start of, hey, now the prospects are quote-unquote ready, which we've heard, how many years have we heard, hey, we're waiting for these guys. Now they, I mean, Christian Campbell could be on the opening day roster. Roman Anthony could be on the opening day roster. Now that these guys are either ready or close to ready, is this the start of a new era of being more invested?
Yeah, maybe this is the culmination of those guys being ready and the organization saying, hey, we're going to have these young guys as cost control dudes that are going to be part of this young core. And there's some young guys on this roster already that are a part of
Duran,
that too.
Duran, Casas, Abreu, so, just won the Gold Glove as a rookie. Yeah,
absolutely. So you have that young mix, and then you sprinkle in the big-time free agents to go with it. And that's kind of what the Red Sox did for the better part of 20 years this century until they started being a middling franchise. Yeah.
I think the model to look at for this year's team is either 2018 or really 2007, because those were teams that had multiple homegrown guys. You look at 07, Youkilis, Pedroia, Ellsbury, right? Homegrown guys. It had guys you traded for like Josh Beckett, Curt Schilling in that rotation. But it also had big ticket signings like Matsuzaka and JD Drew. 2018, they wrote a book called Homegrown about 2018, right? But it also had David Price, Chris Sale, right? Big signings.
So maybe they're trending towards that.
You would hope so.
Yeah, and I think even though, and I know I'm probably going to take crap for this, but hear me out. Even though they didn't finish the job on Juan Soto in December and in the weeks leading up to that, that may have been, now with hindsight, the telltale sign that they were going to take things seriously and change the way that they're going to do business. Yes, they finished $100 million short of getting him. But the
idea,
but the idea that they were willing to spend over $700 million on a 15-year deal on a player may have been the first sign that this ownership group was going to operate more akin to the way they used to operate in 2004 and 2005, 2006, you know, the years as they built towards winning those championships. That may have been the first sign of it, even though they didn't finish the job. And they took a ton of crap for it that week. It was by far the biggest story on our website and on our socials for a few days there in the middle of football season, which is extremely rare for the Red Sox this time of.
Also spoke to how much the Patriots sucked.
Yeah,
a little bit.
That's true. But even with the Patriots sucking, they still have dominated our traffic. So it showed you that baseball can still matter in this town. Now, that was for a negative reason in December. But now this week with Bregman, it has dominated the conversation, right? So the Red Sox may have found a market inefficiency here in Boston and said, the Patriots are down. The Bruins are kind of in this weird middling spot, even though they've had so much regular season success in recent years. Maybe we can come in here and retake some real estate, replant our flag as the team of the city.
When the Red Sox were good, and I'm talking from, say, 03 to 2019, I can really only think of two examples, Tom, where money prevented them from signing someone. And one was in the December 03 when they wanted to rework a contract with A-Rod to get him to the Red Sox, and the Players Association said no.
Yeah, and that wasn't even really their fault. That was more
of the
Players Association.
Well, money, but if they wanted to pay, they, you know what I mean? They didn't pay. They couldn't pay. And then Mark Teixeira in 2009. Like, those are the only times I can really think of they just got flat-out outbid. They either couldn't or wouldn't afford to get the guy they wanted. Really, every other instance, they did, for better or worse. I mean, sometimes it was Pablo Sandoval and Hanley Ramirez. Other times it was, you know, David Price. Other times it was Dyce. So sometimes it was really good. Sometimes it wasn't. And I think what we've seen over the last 5 years is repeatedly them either not being close or being close to not getting a guy, which, again, was so different from when they were good. Now we see them in a span of a couple months, prospect-wise, outbid people for Garrett Crochet, and money-wise, outbid other teams for Alex Bregman, which is a great thing to see, but it's still not the max free, you know, the 6-7 year deal. So what I want to see going forward, like, let's say, and we're going to talk more about Dylan Cease later, do you trade for a guy like Dylan Cease and then extend him? Do you extend Garrett Crochet for big money at some point during this season? I think we've seen positive steps here. Like, again, this Bregman signing, I don't know how you feel. I think last year or the year before, they wouldn't have made this signing. I just don't think they would have. And they did. And
yeah,
I think
you're 100% right. They wouldn't have.
And even the Crochet trade.
Right?
Yeah.
Now,
like, the Crochet trade was not that different from the Dylan Cease trade a year ago that they didn't make. You know what I mean? So it is positive steps, if you will, forward with at least the way they've approached things.
So the Crochet situation is going to be interesting to monitor, because you bring up Fried. It may just be an organizational philosophy that you're not going to give pitchers of a certain age a certain amount of years and a certain amount of money. Now, Crochet is on the younger side, right? So I think that they should be okay giving that guy X amount of years. I don't know. Throw out a number. 8 years, 9 years, whatever.
Because
yeah,
well, you're talking about a guy in his mid-20s.
Exactly.
Right.
Crochet should be kind of separate from that. But I think it's going to be interesting to see in this new era of Red Sox management, front office management, roster management, of how they operate when it comes to pitcher contracts. And even with Bregman, I mean, we talk about it being a 3-year deal, but it's really a 1-year deal, right?
With the opt-out or slash opt-in, if you will. Yeah, it's a 1-year deal, and we'll see.
So maybe they're still trying to be smart about how they spend their money while also still being willing to spend money. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how that works and how that leads to winning on the baseball field for long stretches, yeah. If it does.
And they're a much better baseball team than they were 6 months ago. I mean, you add in Bregman, you add in Crochet, I mentioned Buehler. Like, I think you, and I know Chapman's older, but at least he's a proven arm in the bullpen. Like, you add in what they've done this offseason, like, they're a much better baseball team than they were 6 months ago. And as we talked about earlier, how many years have we been hearing about the kids, the kids, the kids? And it was the big three. Then it was the big four. They trade Kyle Teal, so it's back to the big three. If one or two of those guys are ready to go, then all of a sudden we might be looking at a situation where you have a surplus of guys. There could be another move coming. Could that be related to Cease? Like, seeing how aggressive they get, not just with, hey, do they want to trade for Dylan Cease, but if Christian Campbell's ready, do they actually put him on the opening day roster? If Roman Anthony's right there, do they actually put him on the opening day roster? Like, that's another piece of aggressiveness. If you're like, I know they already have those guys and they're affordable right now, but you put them on the opening day roster, it affects their service time, and you're paying them big money earlier than you would have had to.
So I think we should, at the very least, reset on what we're talking about when it comes to Cease, because this kind of came down today. So I'm just going to read an excerpt from Sean McAdam on Mass Live, and Jared Carabas from Underdog Fantasy had this as well. But this is what McAdam's article says here. An industry source confirmed the Red Sox have been in touch with the San Diego Padres about starting pitcher Dylan Cease, who is being shopped around this spring. That same source cautioned that, to date at least, the interest from the Red Sox has been closer to due diligence level than it is to aggressive pursuit. But for a pitcher of the quality of Cease, the Red Sox at least want to monitor the market.
Yeah, and I think First of all, if you're the Padres, I would not trade that guy. I don't know why.
Padres are the strangest organization.
Yeah, and I love the Padres. Like, I think that I've been to Petco Park. Oh, just a whole side note. But that's a fun place to be. That's a fun team. I want them to do well. I don't know why they would trade Cease outside of they just don't want to pay him. But if you look at what the White Sox got for Cease, I mean, it was the Padres' fifth prospect, their seventh, their eighth, and another prospect as well. The Red Sox can put a package together that would replenish what the Padres gave up for Cease without including Roman Anthony, without including Christian Campbell. And we're talking about the number one farm system in the game by multiple ranking systems, most recently Baseball America. So they can do that. And I think it comes down to maybe the money a little bit, maybe how willing San Diego is to actually deal him. But, Tom, we're going to get into this later in the show. I think if you add Dylan Cease on the heels of Alex Bregman with a rotation that already has Buehler, Hauk, and now Crochet, the World Series is on the table for
100%.
A team with that talent. So I think that's why, again, I talk about 6 months. Like, this is a much better team than 6 months ago, and now they have a chance to take it even to another level beyond that.
Yeah, and I think a guy like Marcelo Mayer would be a part of that package to get Cease, and he's kind of become the odd man out after being kind of the top dog for a little bit.
Fourth overall pick.
Yeah,
all that
it's been
stuff.
Wild. Yeah. But I think that that would be the type of guy you're losing in a Cease deal. I also think maybe you could move a guy like Yoshida in that deal as well. And we can talk about how that looks later and why that makes sense. But yeah, if they can somehow pull this off, and like McAdam said, it's more of them doing due diligence than it is an aggressive pursuit at this point. But the Padres clearly want to move this guy for whatever reason, and the Red Sox clearly are a team that wants to be aggressive here, and maybe working off the high of this Bregman thing, they're going to say, you know what, screw it, let's roll, like, let's get another stud in here and really let's go for it. So I'm fascinated by what this team is going to look like in the first few weeks of the season here, and it's the most excited I've been about a baseball season in a very long time. Even coming out of 2021, when they made that ALCS run, and going into 2022, I still kind of had the bad taste of
Mookie in my mouth.
Well, even
at that time, they let Kyle Schwarber go. They were uncertain about.
It was kind of an out-of-nowhere run in 21. Yeah. That was more of just like an aberration than it was a culmination of them making a run towards building that team and then going for it. So 2022, I kind of went in with nervous energy as it was. This is the first time in a while where I've gone into a season and say, hey, they can build off what they did last year, which was middling, but they had moments where they were among the best teams in the AL until bats got cold and pitchers' arms stopped working. Now they're going to have a roster that can, in theory, account for those things not being as important. Let's say, you know, Hauk's arm isn't what it is at the beginning of the year. You have that backup plan in place. So it's going to be fun. I'm excited for it, man. I really am.
617-779-7937 is the phone line and the text line. We have a loaded show today. We're going to be talking about Alex Bregman. We're going to be talking about Red Sox spring training. We're going to be talking about Dylan Cease. We're also going to be talking about some Patriots coming up next, the Four Nations Tournament. That game was awesome last night. We got some Celtics later in the program at the All-Star break. Lou Maloney joins us at 420. If you want to join us about any of those topics or really anything else, 617-779-7937. But before we get to any of that, it's time to trend with Jacob Lastner. Back here on WEEI, John Lyons alongside Tom Carroll. And we've been talking a lot, not just us two, Tom, but this whole radio station and everyone in Boston for the better part of a week about Alex Bregman and his signing. And you and I were talking before the show about, does this have any effect on any of the other teams in town? And when you look around, like the Celtics, you know, they got a $500 million roster. They're good. The Bruins, they've got a lot of issues. We can talk about that a little later. But you wonder if the Patriots, with the fourth overall pick, and not just the fourth overall pick, but obviously high picks in every round of the draft, a bunch of cap space, a bunch of actual money to spend, are they going to be willing to make a splash similar to what the Red Sox have just done with Alex Bregman?
So I don't think that the Patriots will be individually pushed to make a move just because Bregman signed with the Red Sox. I think that this organization in New England was already poised to try and make that move. And We've seen some reporting this past week from Jason Lockenfora of the Washington Post saying that the Patriots are going to be in contention for T. Higgins, and an NFL GM told him as much, that he wouldn't be surprised if the Patriots landed T. Higgins from Cincinnati, the top wide receiver on the free agent market.
Yeah, probably top overall free agent at any position.
Yeah, I'd say so. So they have $123 million in cap space to spend. They have an absolute mess of a current roster to deal with. And they have a new head coach who wants to establish a new culture. So they need to go out and make a splash. They have to. They have no choice. And they need to hit on their top picks here. I mean, it truly is a make or break offseason for the Patriots here. And I'm not saying that as a hot take. I'm saying that because Drake May is on his rookie deal. And you've seen what he can be. You've seen the ceiling of that guy. You've seen the highs. Now they need to do what they can to maximize that skill set while he's the most affordable he will be in his career. So go out and surround this guy with talent while you have the flexibility to do it. And I think they're really poised to make a leap here. And I don't have their schedule in front of me for 2025. I'm going to pull that up shortly.
It's relatively easy.
They're
look at the opponents
they have. Last place schedule. And a lot of those games are winnable games at home. So you have a quarterback in Drake May that can make big plays. You surround him with some talent. You go and bolster that offensive line as much as you can. And you're cooking with gas here in an AFC that I think is more open than people realize in that middle ground. The top is the top, right? The Chiefs are going to be good. The Bills are going to be good. The Ravens are going to be good. That second tier is prime for a team like the Patriots to come up and be competitive.
And we've been pretty critical of the Red Sox over the past 4 or 5 years about the way they've operated and not wanting to spend into the luxury tax, not wanting to really go after big names. And the Patriots have largely operated the same. I mean, you look at just the last few years. They didn't want to hire a real offensive coordinator in 2022. They failed to get multiple free agents last offseason. Like, there's been multiple instances of them operating very similarly to the Red Sox. And now you look at a situation with the Patriots where you can make the case, Tom, that every position group except quarterback, they have a need at, right? Because even the ones we think are all set, like tight end. Okay, well, Hunter Henry's not getting any younger, and what do they really have behind him? Like corner, Christian Gonzalez is really good, and I personally like Alex Austin a lot, but they don't have a ton of experience there, especially if Jonathan Jones leaves. And even if Jonathan Jones stays, he's probably going to be on his final contract.
And he didn't have a great year.
No, he was pretty inconsistent.
I know people have been saying he's an important guy. You got to bring him back. Big for that locker room, yada, yada. If Jonathan Jones isn't back here, I don't think it's a huge loss for the team on the field.
I think it's a loss, but I think I agree with you in that his year last year showed some decline. And
Absolutely.
Even safety, right? Like Kyle Duggar, I know he was hurt last year, played really poorly. Jabril Peppers, I know it was a legal situation. He was out. He's coming back. But you don't have, like, Marte Mapu, I think, got a lot better last year, but you still have some question marks there. So my point being is that you can make a splash just about anywhere, because outside of quarterback, you could use new talent, new people at basically every position group. And, like, T. Higgins is the guy, obviously, to all of us that stands out, because right now, if you look at the Patriots and their offense, there is no one in their passing game that a defensive coordinator has to game plan around. Right, like we just watched the Super Bowl last week. Every defensive coordinator has to game plan around A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith and the Eagles passing. And that's not even putting Saquon Barkley in the mix. But just in the passing game, the Patriots have no one that you... Because look, again, all due respect to Hunter Henry, he's a good player. Is he a guy that you have to build a whole game plan around? No. Right, like Ramondre Stevenson was good a couple years ago. He was not very good last year. Pop Douglas, I like the player a lot, but are you game planning around him? Whereas T. Higgins, that's a guy that you, as a defensive coordinator, has to game plan around. And they really, I don't think they've had that since Julian Edelman got hurt a few years ago and then subsequently retired. Like, I know Ramondre Stevenson had, what, 69 catches, I think, in 2022, and he was really good, but he was their entire offense. It was just, hey, Matt Patricia loves Stevenson, just stop it. They haven't
Matt
really...
Matt Patricia loved screen passes.
Yes, and they haven't had anyone that you've really had to game plan, and T. Higgins is a guy like that, but it goes beyond him. I mean, Ronnie Stanley could come in and be your starting left tackle. You know, if you really wanted to make...
That's the other name.
That sort of... Like, I'm a big Alaric Jackson guy from the Rams, and he'd be a little more affordable, but you're still going to have to pay him a decent amount of money. Like, same thing with Puna Ford from the Chargers. Like, he's probably a little more affordable, but you're paying him... But then, point being, any position group you look at for the Patriots, they could add someone, and I don't want to call it a splash everywhere, but, like, they could add someone and upgrade outside of quarterback.
You're 100% right, and they need to. I can't stress this enough. They have the cap space to do it. You need to go out and utilize it. And I know that that also goes along with guys need to want to come here, too. And
I think that's something they ran into last year. Calvin Ridley didn't want to come here.
Right.
Brandon Ayuk didn't want to come here. But I think that, Tom, now you have more stability at head coach with Mike Vrabel. You have a much higher respected offensive coordinator in Josh McDaniels. You have, and I think most importantly, a good quarterback in Drake May. And look, I understand Drake May, they only won one game that he played start to finish. I know he turned the ball over too much. I get it. But for the situation he was in as a rookie, he was really good. And it's a hell of a lot better than what you've had at quarterback since 2019, since Tom Brady left.
And let me read you this schedule for 2025. These are the home opponents.
Yep.
Steelers, Browns, Falcons, Panthers, Raiders, Giants, Bills, Dolphins, Jets. Obviously, we know yeah. the division guys at the end. At home there, that's 6 winnable games, and then 6.5, we'll say, yeah. you know, because you split with the division teams every year, right? In
and
years
even if
where
you
you're
win 5 of them, and then you go on the road and you win 4 road games, that's 9 wins. And I'm not and they're not at 9 wins yet.
No.
I think right now, with Mike Vrabel and Josh McDaniels, and I'll add in Terrell Williams and the coaching staff as a whole, I think they're probably, right now, it's probably a 7-ish win team. And I say that because they won 4 games the last 2 years. They lost a bunch of close games the last 2 years, despite being bad. Now you have better quarterback play than you've had at any point in the last couple of years. Much better coaching than a year ago. So maybe 1 or 2 of those close games that you lost, maybe you win one. Like, 2023, when you went to Buffalo and you turned the ball over 4 times in the first 20 minutes, or that backwards pass fiasco this year in Buffalo.
Man.
Like, I think, though, with a Mike Vrabel and then Drake May in year 2, like, things like that I don't think will happen. So I think you're at 7 right now.
100%. I'm right there with you.
But you add a T. Higgins, you add an Alaric Jackson, you add a Puna Ford. If you've noticed, I've mentioned those guys twice already. Those are my top 3 guys. But you add a few guys like that, and then, by the way, you still have that 4th overall pick. Then maybe you can win 8 or 9 and fight for a playoff spot, right? Because we all look at, hey, look at what the Houston Texans did a couple years ago with C.J. Stroud. Well, they spent a couple years building up to that point, right? They brought in Laramie Tunsil. They brought him in some other players. Then they get DeMeco Ryan, C.J. Stroud, and boom, they're in the divisional round. I would even say, look at Washington this year. They picked ahead of you in the draft a year ago, and they were just in the NFC Championship game. Why? They brought in a legit head coach. And look, I know we all remember Dan Quinn for 28-3, he was still in the Super Bowl. And they brought in a legit offensive coordinator. They had some talent there, and then they added to it, and all of a sudden, boom, they're a really good team. So I think you look at where the Patriots are at right now, I think you made the point, they almost have to make a splash because they're at a point in an AFC East that they can actually be a team that can fight for a playoff spot if they make a few additions to this roster.
Yeah, and the schedule lines up, and I hate
and that's
to be,
the other piece of it. No, you're right, though.
I hate to be the Mr. Schedule guy, right, especially in February, but with everything you have with the roster flexibility at this point, with all this cap space, and you have a quarterback making no money, you have the new coach in that guys want to play for. I mean, you have Jeffrey
Feels
Simmons flirting with the idea of being traded to the Patriots on social media. You have the A.J. Brown subliminal messages Vrabel sending to him. I don't think he's going anywhere, but you get the point. There's guys that want to play with Vrabel, that like Vrabel, that want to play with Drake May. He's a good young quarterback, and you have all this money to give away, and you're playing a last-place schedule. I already mentioned the home opponents. On the road, you're playing winnable games against Tennessee and New Orleans.
Bad team.
Yeah.
Just got a new head coach.
I mean, you just beat Cincinnati on the road. You're playing them again. So, I don't know.
I wouldn't expect that to go the same way.
Can you beat them again, you know, with a new coach?
Look at the AFC East. Like, Buffalo's legit, right? Buffalo's a top five team in the NFL. The Jets, I think they have a lot of nice pieces there. And I personally am a fan of the Aaron Glenn hire there. I think he's going to be legit. But that's probably going to take a couple years with a young quarterback to get going. I wouldn't be surprised if the Dolphins take a step back. I mean, you saw Tyreek Hill after the season talk about maybe not coming back and then saying later on, oh, no, I'll be back. But that's also a team that, every year Mike McDaniel's been head coach, they faded down the stretch. So, I mean, you're at a point, again, right now with just Mike Vrabel, you're probably a 6 or 7 win football team after 4 last year. But you add a T. Higgins, like you make one of these signings, and then you hit on that 4th overall pick, all of a sudden, look, you're still not going to be the Ravens. You're not going to be the Bills. You're not going to be the Chiefs. But all of a sudden, you'll be a hell of a lot better than you were a year ago. I mean, you look at some of the one-possession games they've lost in the last 2 years, especially to bad teams. I mean, remember that 10-7 loss to the Giants a couple years ago?
Oh, my God.
But, like, that's my point is that I think with Mike Vrabel and Drake May in year two alone, you can win some of those games. Then you make a T. Higgins splash on top of it. And look, we're talking about T. Higgins. It could be T. Higgins. It could be a trade for DK Metcalf. It could be another, you know, name for that. It could be a trade for a Deebo Samuel. Frankly, Tom, I want them to bring in 2 new receivers. I'm a big DeMario Douglas guy. I'm a big fan of Kendrick Bourne, actually, too. Jalen Polk was a 2nd-round pick, so I guess you give him another year. But really, outside of DeMario Douglas, who's a lock in that receiver?
I think all of those guys are expendable. And I'm
I'd
with
keep
you.
Douglas
I
for think, the role in McDaniel's offense.
I think Bourne's good when he's healthy. I think Pop is someone that has talent and has shown it at times. I think Booty had some ups, but a lot of downs.
I don't think he gets it, though.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of issues there that go beyond the player on the field. So I think I'm with you where bringing in 2 receivers wouldn't be shocking to me.
Yeah.
And I think you'd scrap the whole room. I really do.
But then I wonder.
I'm not married to any of those guys for this team next year.
I wonder, because Fitzy and I, about a month ago, we had Chad Graff on the night show, and he said that the front office, including Elliot Wolf, they think they had a good draft last year, and those dudes are just poorly coached. And I wonder, just Josh McDaniels look at it and say, yeah, Jalen Polk could be a good player. He was poorly coached. Or, yeah, Caden Wallace could be a really good right tackle. He was
just Caden Wallace
injured,
is interesting.
And obviously he was injured too.
Yeah,
because
we just don't know who he is or what he is.
And Caden Wallace played 2,300 snaps at Penn State. They were all at right tackle, but then all of a sudden in training camp, they were kind of bouncing him back and forth. And it's like, well, I mean, do you want to make him a left tackle? what are you really doing? And then remember that week 3 game against the Jets? He actually came in and played some left tackle, so
he was put in a really bad spot.
Yeah, I agree with you, and that's why I wonder, though, does Josh McDaniels, does Mike Vrabel look at that and say, hey, Javon Baker's actually a good player. He was just poorly coached, and they didn't play, and our offensive line was so bad we couldn't get him the ball. Like, do they look at it like that? Because I bet you Josh McDaniels looks at Pop Douglas and says, that's a guy that'll be really productive in my offense. My question is, does he look at any of the other guys that way? Like, does he agree with Elliot Wolf, like what Chad Graff told us, that, oh, they think they had a good draft and these dudes are poorly coached?
Yeah, it's interesting because in training camp, guys like Polk and Baker showed out a little bit. I mean, you and I were there. We saw those guys make big plays, and they were kind of the talk of camp.
Polk got worse as the year went on.
He really did, and it was quick. It was like 2 weeks into the year, he looked like a completely different player than he did in August. And I wonder if that had a lot to do with the locker room and the situation with the coaching staff being so disjointed and him being a young player and kind of getting lost in that and not having those veteran leaders around him to say, hey, this is the way you're supposed to operate and this is how you're supposed to do things. Look, I wouldn't be shocked if he turns out to be a bust. He had one of the worst rookie years I've seen a guy have in a long time.
Yeah,
but I am holding out hope that a guy that gets drafted in the 2nd round can have a guy like McDaniels who knows what he's doing with an offense and now has another year of working with May. And May, even when the young receivers were playing poorly and doing nothing on the field, they weren't even a factor in the losses. They weren't even getting snaps. May was still making a point to mention those guys in press conferences and always talking about his rookie class and working with the young guys and working on their confidence. So I think that there is an outside chance that those guys could make a year two leap with McDaniels as the OC. Like you mentioned, Pop is a guy akin to that Edelman, yeah, Welker type.
And I don't think he's as good as those guys,
no,
but he's in that role. I mean,
yeah,
what do you have, 43 catches as a rookie with Bill O'Brien and Mac Jones, Bailey Zappe off.
Right.
So I think in McDaniels' offense, he can be that guy. But I think that, to me, is an interesting question for the offseason, because does McDaniels look at it like Chad Graff supporting, where, hey, the front office thinks these guys can be good and they were poorly coached? Because if he does, then we might be sitting here saying, oh, they can add one receiver and they're fine. But if he looks at it and says, yeah, Baker's not good enough, Bourne is not the same guy since his injury, Polk's not good enough, we're going to be talking about two new receivers, maybe three new receivers coming in this year.
So if they add Higgins, like, let's say their receiver room stays basically the same as what it is right now, mm-hmm, and then they add Higgins, that already is leaps and bounds better, because now
it's a guy they got a game.
You have a legit number one, which makes Booty's life easier as a number two, which makes Pop's life easier as a slot guy, which makes the tight ends' lives easier. I think Hunter and Hooper are both guys that are legit tight ends. I don't think they're elite tight ends, but May has a good chemistry with both of those guys. I think you want to have both of them back in the mix. I really think that getting a guy like Higgins, just one, is going to change the outlook of this offense immensely.
Yeah. Good stat from Savage Sports on Twitter, too. In five games played without Ja'Marr Chase in his career, T. Higgins averages over 100 yards a game in those five games. So he's shown he can be, at least in a limited sample size, the guy. So I think that's an encouraging thing looking at it. But I wonder, like, we've seen the Red Sox change this year, how they've operated the last years. They've made these couple big splashes. If the Patriots follow suit, we're going to be having a much different conversation this December than we have the last few years in December, thankfully. But,
and to reiterate, the Patriots have the flexibility to do it.
They can do it.
They don't have any excuses other than T. Higgins telling them, I don't want to come here.
Yeah.
They can pay him the most. They should go out and do that. They have the biggest need for it, for all of the reasons we've discussed this segment. And I know that Cincinnati wants to make a push to bring Higgins back, but they also need to worry about Ja'Marr Chase. And Ja'Marr Chase
and Trey
is
Hendrickson.
Right.
Yeah.
And they just paid Burrow. So Chase is about to try and restructure his deal. He wants to get paid $30+ million a year.
He's arguably the best, him and Justin Jefferson, the two best receivers in the league.
He just came off a triple crown.
Yeah.
One of only like nine receivers to ever do that, or whatever, five in the modern era. It's something crazy. So he just saw the deal that Justin Jefferson got. Chase is going to go to them and say, hey, pay me that or more, because I might be better than him. And you're the Cincinnati Bengals. The Cincinnati Bengals, since becoming a franchise, have operated the way the Red Sox have operated the last 5 years. They've never paid anyone. They are notoriously one of the cheapest franchises in the history of sports. They just went out and paid Burrow what they paid him. They're going to have to pay Chase if they want Burrow to remain there and be happy. Hendrickson, as you mentioned, is someone they need to take care of on the defensive side of the ball. Higgins is going to be the odd man out. And I know that he just changed his agent over to be the same as Ja'Marr Chase's agent. Maybe that's some sort of telltale sign that he wants to stay in Cincinnati. But ultimately, can Cincinnati afford to keep him at the number that he's going to want to be paid and the number he should be paid given the talent?
Did you watch the Four Nations last night?
Of course.
It was awesome. We're going to get into that next. That was honestly one of the most entertaining.
Almost as good as the dunk contest.
Yeah, yeah. One of the most entertaining hockey games I've seen in a long time. And we're also going to make fun of producer Jacob's shirt when we get back. We have good reason to. But all that coming up next here on WEEI. I don't know about you, Tom Carroll. That was awesome last night.
So fun.
It's John Lyons alongside Tom Carroll. By the way, before we go any further, producer Jacob Lassner, how are you?
fantastic.
You want to tell the people what you're wearing?
I am wearing a Florida Panthers alternate jersey with a sun, a palm tree, and a hockey stick.
Why?
Yeah, that's my question.
Because I am a big fan of Matthew Tkachuk, who was a hero for Team USA last night.
Oh, good save.
Yeah, no, that's such a stretch, though. Yeah.
He's also not a Bruins fan, so.
Yeah. We got a lot of problems with Jacob. Yeah.
He's from New York.
Yeah. I didn't even know that. Add to the list. Unreal. I'm just going to call him the producer the rest of the show.
He's lost name producer.
Yes, lost name. So, just playing it about himself. So, last night, I thought was, honestly, Tom, going in, I didn't really know what to expect. Because, you know, sometimes these all-star games, these tournaments, they can get a little, for lack of a better term, soft. There's not as much physical. Even in the Olympics, because they play in those wider rinks, it's not quite as physical. And don't get me wrong, the intensity's high. What I saw, that was one of the most intense hockey games I've watched in a very long time. Maybe in my whole life. Like, that felt like an Eastern Conference final, Stanley Cup final type intense. I mean, the biggest moment in the game was, of all people, Charlie McAvoy lighting up Connor McDavid. After that, the U.S. scores. They eventually score again later to go on to win. But the physicality, the intensity, the three fights, and I mean, that, from a sports viewing perspective, that was awesome.
Yeah, and all the fights to start the game,
three too. 3 and 9 seconds.
That was amazing. Yeah. And like,
that'll be me in the afternoon show tomorrow with Fitzy and Dan Ball.
Right, there you go. After the second one, I was like, okay, yeah, now it's time to get into the hockey. And then the third one, it was like, oh, okay, this is getting kind of ridiculous. But it set the tone. It set the tone that the game mattered. And like you mentioned, these all-star game type performances, they're never really all that serious because guys don't want to get hurt. They don't want to risk anything having to do with injury when the job that they work 9 to 5 is paying them millions of dollars a year. I totally understand that. Their ultimate goal is always to win a championship in their respective league, in their respective sport. But this felt different. And going into it, I think there was, rightfully so, people going in with their eyebrows raised saying, how serious is this thing? It's only 4 countries, and are they going to even play hard? Yada, yada. It's clear that these guys are going to play hard and that this thing really matters. So if other leagues can come up with a way to capture that energy and do something like this moving forward, I think they desperately need to do so. And, you know, I know last night was just the skills competition for the NBA.
Didn't even watch.
It was a joke.
And I used to like it, but I mean, what we saw last night, USA Canada, blew away anything we were going to see from the NBA this weekend, blew away anything we saw from the NFL at the Pro Bowl. And I like the baseball all-star game, but I think what we saw last night was even better than that.
And again, it's not even close.
I watch the baseball all-star game every year. It's the one all-star game I truly enjoy. I look forward to it every season. But what we saw last night was a higher level of intensity.
Yeah, and it's a different
that ball first
game.
Connor McDavid goal, or that only
so
Connor,
sick.
And look, I've seen him do things like that before. He's played against the Bruins. Obviously, he went to the Stanley Cup final last year. But as he's blowing past guys at 22 miles an hour, I had to stop for a second. I'm like, this isn't just any old he's blowing by Team USA at 22 miles an hour for a goal. I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, McAvoy absolutely.
And then McAvoy blows him up.
And then that leading to a goal.
And then Dylan Larkin, right? Like, he whole career on the Red Wings, almost never in the playoffs. I think he's made the playoffs like 2 or 3 times, if that. So not a lot of people maybe on a national, international level know him. And that goal to take, that was awesome. And the Jake Gensel goal, again, not enough people know about him. This, I think, helps not just that it was great, but now you have guys that maybe the average fan, the international, don't know about, and they get to see them perform on that stage.
Yeah, and so, like I was talking about with the skills competition thing for the NBA, it was a joke, and a guy from the G League wins the dunk contest, and
again,
we could talk about that in a different segment here, but my main point there is it sets the stage for like this very unserious weekend for the NBA, and the
NBA, put the Pro Bowl and the NFL in the same
boat. They have the same problem.
They're doing like gym class competitions.
You have these sports asking basketball fans to invest their time and energy into this thing, and they want ratings to improve, and they want people to be interested, and they're trying out their own new format this year. Instead of a traditional All-Star game, tonight they're going to have a mini tournament with four teams.
Which is so stupid
and
in
like,
itself.
Yeah, it's so... I see what they're trying to do, but the gimmicks don't work. Like, the NHL All-Star Game tried to do their different thing with the mini tournaments.
And that was stupid.
And it was dumb, and it wasn't fun to watch, and it was boring. The Pro Bowl is awful. I watched it for work this year, and
sorry you had to do that.
It was terrible. It was like the worst 3.5 hours of my life. And that's an exaggeration, but you know what I mean. So the NHL has harnessed something here. And luckily, they're going to have international play during this All-Star break next year with the Olympics. 2027, they're going back to a regular All-Star game for some reason. And then in 2028, they have a World Cup of Hockey coming up, which will be the fourth time they've ever done that, 96, 04, and 2016, all of which were awesome. They get referenced all the time. I remember watching the 2016 stuff, you know, nonstop. I was obsessed with it. That North American team was so fun with all those young guys.
So true.
So, yeah, it was a blast. So,
it really was.
You know, I have a feeling that right now they're scheduled to have that 27 All-Star game be the traditional All-Star.
Yep.
I have a feeling that they're going to see what happened in Montreal last night and say, no.
Especially if
we
it
need
gets
to do
followed
this
up
again.
Monday night and Thursday night at TD Garden.
How awesome would it be if it was Four Nations Olympics, Four Nations World Cup? And like that was the cadence moving forward here where you have international hockey, soccer. It drives the interest in all of these club leagues around the world. So it would just help spread interest and get people more interested in the sport. I think that the NHL needs to take a long, hard look at what happened on Saturday and hope that players continue to stay healthy this upcoming week here in Boston and make the switch to this being the thing that they do as many years as they can do it until inevitably some guy gets hurt and they change their mind, because that will happen. But until that happens, this is awesome.
617-779-7937. We see your calls. We see your texts. We're going to take those coming up next. We've got a lot to still get to. More Bregman, more Cease, more Patriots, more Celtics, more Four Nations. You can weigh in on all of it coming up in the second hour of John Lyons and Tom Carroll on WEEI.